Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. French Impressionism has long been one of the most popular styles of visual art in America, so there are, of course, many Tulsans looking forward to a new exhibit opening this weekend at Philbrook Museum of Art. Monet and the Seine, Impressions of a River, examines Claude Monet's continual fascination with the relationship between light and water in this most French river over a quarter century. Through the course of his life, Monet moved up and down the river, painting scene after scene in all kinds of light and weather. And through the course of the exhibition, you'll see how Monet's way of depicting nature changed over time. Monet and the Seine opens Sunday at the museum, and the exhibition is co-organized by Philbrook and the Museum of Fine Arts in Houston. The Tulsa exhibition will focus on a series of paintings Monet created in 1896 and 97 called Mornings on the Seine, depicting the same scene in a variety of morning light settings. My guest today is Sarah Lees, the new Ruth G. Hardman Curator of European Art at Philbrook. She joined the museum about 4 months ago from the Clark Institute of Art in Massachusetts, where she was the Associate Curator of European Art. She joins us today to preview Monet and the Seine, Impressions of a River, which opens Sunday at Philbrook. Sarah Lees, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
And a sort of belated welcome to Tulsa. This is your fourth month at Philbrook.
Yes, yes.
And you came in right in the middle of this big exhibition for us in Tulsa, because it's been a long time since we've had an impressionistic exhibition in the city.
Yes, absolutely. My understanding is this is the first Monet exhibition for Philbrook. I know you have had French paintings in the past, but it is exciting to get this particular type of work here for our viewers.
And in fact, Monet and the Seine, this is a classic, the Impressionists and the Seine, all of the Impressionists were drawn to this river. What was so intriguing about this river that made them want to paint it over and over again?
Well, I think there were a couple of reasons. First, it is closely identified with the country itself. I mean, it is the principal river that runs through Paris. It's one of the five large rivers in the country. And I think also, particularly in Monet's case, he actually chose for all of his life to live near the river. So he lived in a number of different places, Paris for a brief time, but then always chose to live in these smaller towns or villages that were literally right along the course of the river. And so I think because it was a place that he was familiar with, that he explored over different periods of his life, it was a place that he could use in a lot of different ways that appears in his art regularly in different sort of guises.
In many ways, Monet, even though he moved around a lot, he was sort of a homebody. He was like, go out, walk out, set up an easel and paint.
Absolutely. He very much explored, you know, his immediate surroundings and clearly spent a lot of time, you know, in the fields outside his house. He also actually constructed a studio boat at a certain point in his career, and that became very important for particularly these kinds of paintings of the Seine, because he literally did spend a lot of time. He looked at different locations from all different possible angles, and it allowed him to have a perspective on these locations that was somewhat unusual. You know, it wasn't everyone who would spend time in a boat in this way, and so it gave a different type of subject matter of composition to his work.
Now, there are some famous images by other Impressionists of Monet on his studio boat. How did he get that idea?
Well, in fact, there was an older artist, Charles-François d'Aubigny, who first developed the idea of a studio boat. I think it was about 1857. D'Aubigny came up with the idea of constructing basically a sort of a small cabin on a boat that he had purchased and then outfitting it as a studio. And so Monet kind of took the idea from d'Aubigny and ran with it. And again, because he was always living near the river, it became a very useful tool. So we have reproduced an image by another older artist, Edouard Manet, that actually shows Monet in his studio boat, you know, with an easel painting away. As I say, it became something.
That's funny because d'Aubigny, I don't think of him, I think of more of a studio painter. Did he do
True.
A lot of plein air?
Yes, well, I think d'Aubigny was in a group of artists who really did want to go out into the countryside and create images that were more spontaneous, more direct. And it's true that once d'Aubigny made sort of these direct immediate sketches,
he
would then
the
take them back into the studio.
And then, of course, Monet was about of the moment and creating
yes,
something of
yes.
the moment and setting it aside.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, Monet, I think, looked at what a number of older artists were doing, used some of their techniques, but then kind of adapted them did something more innovative with them and made those ideas his own.
Now, in this particular exhibit, you have images going from right around 1870, which is really the beginning of Impressionism, although he was kind of experimenting with the techniques in the late 1860s, to about 1900. Yes. And at 1900, he's still pretty figurative, but, you know, he's starting to experiment with sort of these very abstract impressions of real life. So we get a sense of this, his whole development over 30 years. And this is what's really interesting about when you see a big Monet show. You see how he's constantly experimenting with this, again, depicting light and changing light on the environment.
Yes, absolutely. I think this is one of the strengths of our exhibition, is it really gives you kind of a neat little cross-section of a large piece of Monet's career. As you say, the earliest painting that we are including is from about 1872-73. And the latest goes to 1901. So, you know, the dawn of the 20th century. And Monet actually does play an important role in this way. As you say, the way that his painting technique develops from something that is initially connected to earlier painting styles and in the end becomes not quite abstract, but there is something about particularly his later paintings that does point the way, I think, towards 20th century abstraction.
Yeah, and of course, later on in his Water Lily series and the paintings he's doing at Giverny, you know, there's an image there, but you have to know the image to really recognize it, because some of the water lilies are almost color fields.
Absolutely. And that was something that, of course, you know, American artists in the 1950s kind of appreciated and realized in Monet's work, that there was a kinship between that and what they were doing.
Now, what the exhibit also shows us is Monet moved up and down the river. I mean, he moved, as some images are from Giverny, some from Argenteuil, which I really love that particular area. And he was in there, what, about 1870s or 18?
Yes, well, as I say, he really spent most of his life along the river. Monet was born in Paris, but then at the age of five moved to Le Havre, which is at the mouth of the Seine on the English Channel. And then he sort of moved back to Paris for a while, and his first kind of residence as, you know, maybe an adult on his own was in Argenteuil, which is only about 15 minutes by train from Paris. Even then, of course, the trains were being developed at that period. And, you know, it's now essentially a suburb, but at that point, Argenteuil was a bit more rural, still close to Paris, and therefore it was a place where, in fact, it was known for boating. There were yacht races, sailing, you know, so it was kind of an upper middle class location. And we have a gorgeous painting of Argenteuil that, first of all, captures just the perfect impression of a bright, sunny day in the summertime. It has, you know,
bright red boat.
Yeah, and the contrast between the red boat, and deliberately chosen, the red boat and the sort of the green foliage along the bank is really stunning. But then again, if you look carefully at that image, you can see a little couple. You know, the woman has a parasol. They're obviously sort of well-to-do, and maybe they're about to set off on their yacht or something. So it's a very specific image of that type of place. And later on, Monet is less interested in that kind of almost narrative element and really focuses on just the natural phenomenon.
And really capturing the light, too.
Yes, absolutely.
It's interesting, Argenteuil is interesting for a number of reasons, because, you'll see that sort of, it's on the landscape, but there's this societal element, you know, of, you know, this is a place we go to relax. And there are a lot of images of sailboats sailing on the river at that particular time that he's doing at the time. But he's also sort of celebrating and commenting on progress, because, you know, one of his favorite subjects was the Argenteuil Railroad Bridge, which was a new development over the Seine, and he painted that numerous times.
Yes, absolutely. I think Monet's relationship or interest in progress, as you say, in industrial development is an interesting question. I mean, I think in some ways he almost tries to integrate those kinds of signs of modernity into the landscape. He is fascinated by the railroad bridge, there's actually, I think, two bridges in Argenteuil, and one is a road bridge. So you see a number of paintings of those things at an earlier point, not in our show, but, you know, you may be familiar with a group of paintings of the Gare Saint-Lazare, the train station, that are very much about industrial development. But again, after a while, you know, he doesn't emphasize that kind of aspect of the landscape, and you get more the sense that while those things are there, Monet might have shifted his perspective just enough to kind of minimize those or almost get those out of the frame in some ways. So he really is more absorbed in the natural landscape, I think.
Now, I think it's a little later for Argenteuil. He moved to, I'm probably going to fracture the name, Vetteuil. And again, he captures the river in a wide variety of conditions, whether it's snow, frost, ice flows in the river at times, floods at times. And there's this one scene that he loves where I guess he's literally across the river from the village itself. And he, I don't know how many times he painted that over the years.
No, absolutely. When he was living in Vetteuil, he made paintings of the village itself. And then there was another even smaller village right across the river called Lavacourt. And again, it seemed as though he would just kind of paint those things over and over because they were right there. They were in front of him. They were easily accessed. Some of them you do get the sense, again, that he's in his boat kind of exploring, you know, different ways to look at the scene from one angle versus another. And the element of sort of weather is also important. He seems at this moment to be looking for as much variety as possible. So different times of day, different seasons. There's one quite remarkable image, as you mentioned, of ice flows in the river. So there was one winter from 1879 to 1880 that was especially cold. And the Seine froze solid, which was unusual. And then when it thawed, Monet made at least a dozen paintings of this kind of unusual sight, that river filled with ice. And clearly he would have had to be outdoors under quite cold conditions, but he was that dedicated to getting that unusual kind of scene. The light, of course, was in some cases that very dull winter light that he wanted to, again, capture as many, as wide a range of different sort of conditions as possible.
And that's really one of the most interesting things about that particular period. And really all throughout his career, I mean, he did a lot of what you would call dull light conditions in Holland when he lived in Holland for a while. That didn't seem to, that wasn't as much an impact as I'm going to capture what I'm seeing this particular day.
Yes, absolutely. He wasn't only interested in making bright sunny scenes with flowers, but he really wanted to get, as you say, the particular moment of a particular day. And if it happened to be gray or rainy even, you know, that was what he wanted to capture in his canvases.
Yeah. And some are gray, some are bright sunny. And what you see in this show, too, as he move along, is it becomes, I don't want to say sketchier, but it's almost like it's the paintings are leaving more to your imagination to fill in the details.
Yes, absolutely. There are a few, there's actually one painting in particular that looks especially sketchy. And I think in some cases, they may be works that aren't entirely finished. Now, the question of finish, particularly when you're talking about Impressionism, is fairly complicated. But in fact, Monet would start a painting, often outdoors, and then come back to it at a later point, which also meant that if he chose to only do that once or twice with a particular painting, it, in a sense, was less finished than something that he worked on 10 times or 20 times. So, and yet, a painting like that was sketchy was still acceptable. I mean, it was still something that he signed and could exhibit or, you know, sell to a collector. So there, again, is a wide range of, you know, what was considered acceptable at that point. And the range was expanded by people like Monet, by the Impressionists, of course, who presented these works as finished.
My guest today is Sarah Lees, the Ruth G. Hardman Curator of European Art at the Philbrook Museum of Art. Philbrook is presenting the first ever Monet show for the museum or in any time in Tulsa, titled Monet and the Seine, Impressions of a River. It opens Sunday and runs through September 7th at the museum. I think this has probably been the biggest impressionistic exhibit since we had an Arm & Hammer show years ago. That would have been in the like late 80s or somewhere like that. So this is a big event for the city. And again, it opens Sunday, and my guest is Sarah Lees, who came into this process from the Clark Institute about 4 months ago. Obviously, you come right in the middle of the show. How did this show come about? Because as you well know, Philbrook doesn't even own a Monet, and usually that's one of the basis for getting a show of a particular artist, is you have some basis. How did the show come about?
Well, it really was the idea of my predecessor, Tanya Paul. And as is fairly typical for these kinds of big exhibitions, it took about 2 or 3 years to bring everything together. So she had the initial idea of focusing on, in fact, some of the later works that we're showing, a particular series of paintings called Mornings on the Seine, and to try to bring a group of those together. And the exhibition kind of expanded from that original idea. And of course, it also involved requesting all of the paintings on loan from a number of different museums. We have 3 paintings from French museums. The rest are from literally all across the country. So some from, you know, the Boston Museum of Fine Arts, another from Portland in Oregon. And it was, you know, a long process to bring all these things together.
Well, we're really glad that it's here. As you go through the exhibition, you mentioned the Mornings on the Seine, and this is a wonderful series that he did fairly later, if I'm thinking correctly. It's around Giverny, correct?
Right.
And it's the cover for the exhibition catalog details one of these scenes. And this is where you're beginning to see this beginning of the forms becoming more colors that give you the impression of trees and river.
Absolutely.
As opposed to an actual depiction.
Mm-hmm.
And when did this series take place? Was this the 1890s?
Yes. Monet began the series actually in the summer of 1896, but apparently there was such a long string of bad weather at that point that he sort of dropped it at a certain moment and picked it up again in 1897, so the following summer. To make these paintings, he actually set out from his house, as you say, in Giverny, walked it. There's a great narrative, actually, so we know a bit about how it came about. He sort of walked across the fields, you know, jumped a stream, hopped into a little rowboat, and then rowed out to his studio boat, which was anchored in a single spot for this whole series. So one of the key factors about this is that for each of these paintings, he's looking at precisely the same spot. So that makes the subject matter of all these paintings the same, and yet they're so remarkably varied because what he did was at each moment that the light changed, so from, you know, 3:30 in the morning to 4:30, he would start another canvas. And in a sense then, these works track, you know, different moments of time as the sun rises. So in part, the reason that they look so sort of soft, misty, gauzy is because he is choosing a moment, you know, right at sunrise, when that is what the landscape looks like. There are a few that are a bit later in the day, so maybe at 7:30, and the image is clearer, sharper, the sun is obviously brighter. But he did, you know, want, again, to choose this particular moment in the day to get the sense of what the river at dawn looked like.
Yeah, and in fact, in many of his series, like when you think of the Rouen Cathedral, you think of his hay bales.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's everything from early morning in the winter to the late spring or late fall to sunset or midday. And he would just capture what the light was doing on his particular subject.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, that's one of the distinguishing features of this particular series, The Mornings on the Seine, is that he really was trying to sort of limit the variables in a sense. because as you say, with Rouen Cathedral, with the grain stacks, he did look at them over different seasons, you know, morning, noon, and night. And in this case, it was really a very small slice of time and place. And really the only things that change are the way he puts paint on canvas. And this is kind of one of the amazing things about this concept of a series of paintings, which is really something that Monet was probably the first artist to come up with, is that when you remove the variables of subject matter, so you're always looking at the same thing, what becomes the focus is not so much an image of islands on a river, but really the way that paint is placed on canvas. So it's really about the artist's choices.
And the color.
And the colors, the, you know, a thick brushstroke versus a thin one. And in a sense, as I said, this is what sort of points the way towards abstraction, that suggesting that a painting is just paint on canvas was one of the results of this approach to painting.
And depending on the conditions of the day, you know, I had a photographer on who was doing a similar series where he was pointing his camera across the bay in California, and he would always shoot it right at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And what became amazing was that some days it was like you would expect to see a view across the bay. Other times there were purples, there were yellows, there were crazy colors from clouds and fog being on the bay. And of course, that's what Monet's capturing. I mean, if it's a bright sunny day, everything's green. Mm-hmm. If there's a fog and mist on the water and the light is diffused, you're seeing purples and yellows and ochres and all sorts of crazy colors.
Absolutely. And I have to say, this is one of the really exciting things about seeing these works in person, bringing them together and finally putting them on the wall after working with, you know, thumbnails and what you have on a checklist, is that the first thing that strikes you, of course, is a similarity. And then sort of a minute later, you realize, no, they're so incredibly different. As you say, there's so many very subtle, different colors. And suddenly the differences are what seem more striking about these works rather than the similarities. So it really is an amazing kind of development in the way that you see them when you can see them in person.
Now, Philbrick's exhibition of Monet and the Seine features a number of canvases by Monet, but it also features one by Corot.
Yes.
Now, what is this outlier doing here, the moored boatman?
Yes, well, actually, the Corot works really beautifully to demonstrate, in part, the way Monet started and then what he did with kind of his initial inspiration. So Corot, as you probably know, is an older artist and kind of represents the accepted method of landscape painting in mid-century France. So Corot was kind of the most prominent French landscape painter around 1850 when Monet was getting his start. So Monet actually appreciated sort of the freshness, the immediacy of Corot's painting, but he knew that he wanted to do something different. So in part, the way Corot worked would be to go outdoors to sketch in front of the landscape, but then to bring his sketches back into the studio and to produce a more finished, a more fully worked up painting, not really in front of the subject itself. And in fact, one of the, again, a detail that I noticed about the Corot that we're showing that I didn't realize until I got it on the wall is that it's dated January 1860 or 1861, and the scene you see is of summer. So there's no way that he could have painted that particular painting in January, and yet, you know, that's the way he signed it. So, it demonstrates sort of the way Corot worked. And Monet, of course, knew that he wanted to work outdoors. He wanted to translate into paint the experience that he got when he was outdoors. And so Corot was both, as I say, a point of comparison and something to move away from.
Well, we're looking forward to this exhibit, Monet and the Seine, Impressions of a River, which opens Sunday and runs through September 7th. Sarah Lees is my guest, the Ruth G. Hardman Curator of European Art at Philbrook, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, is there going to be a lot of programming surrounding this exhibition?
We do have a number of good programs lined up. The first thing is this Sunday at 2 p.m. when Tanya Paul, the curator formerly at Philbrook who brought this exhibition together, will be giving a lecture.
And she's now at Milwaukee Art
Museum. She's now at Milwaukee, exactly. So we're thrilled to have her come back and present the show for us. After that, there will be another couple of lectures later on in the year. There's a lot of programming with our education department, so things for children as well as adults. We'll be doing a couple of gallery talks in the exhibition, so certainly check the website to find out all the details. But I think it should be a good active program that will really bring a lot of this to life for our visitors.
And of course, you're, as I mentioned earlier, so you've been at Philbrook 4 months. You come here from a very fine museum, the Clark Institute in Western Massachusetts, which has an extensive collection of Renoir,
yes,
and as well as a variety of Impressionists, and just a full spectrum of European art. And I assume that's your background, correct?
It is, yes.
And so as you get to know the Philbrook, what are some of the things you're going to pursue as a curator?
Well, there are a lot of really great opportunities for both smaller exhibitions and kind of larger ones. One thing that I think I'll be working on for next year is an exhibition on some etchings by Whistler and the group of artists around him. So a bit about the revival of interest in etching in England and France, mm-hmm, in the 19th century. And a bit further out, I'm also working on a show that will focus on the earlier 19th century and a bit about neoclassicism, since Philbrick does have a couple of paintings from again, that right around the turn of the 18th to 19th century, and possibly going as far as Romanticism. So it would be interesting to look at that very transitional moment around the French Revolution and just afterwards.
And, of course, you get these huge splits in French painting at that particular time where, you know, you start to see the Barbizon school, which leads into Impressionism. And then you have this other school that is following this very precise depiction of what they're wanting to show. And that leads into the neoclassicism and then Romanticism.
Right. Certainly the long 19th century is filled with about as many different ideas and different types of artists as you could hope.
Now, will it go in as far as to showcase things like the Bouguereaus?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. And I know that there was an exhibition on Bouguereau a couple of years ago. But that, again, is one of the strengths of the permanent collection at Philbrook. And so another nice aspect of bringing Monet here is that it fills out the picture of the 19th century that we can present to our visitors. In other words, Monet was working at the same time as Bouguereau, essentially, and yet they couldn't be more different as artists.
Yeah.
So it's great to bring them together in this way.
Now, I'm sure the situation is the same at the Clark as at the Philbrook. You know, when you come to a new museum, there's the things that you normally show, and then there are always things that are put away that come out every so often. What's the process of learning about that as a new curator?
Well,
you just kind of go through the vaults?
Yes, well, there is a vault, and I have been down there, and you do get to kind of pull out racks and just see what's there. So it is, as you say, it's a process, and I need to sort of keep pulling out racks and seeing what more we might have to put on view.
Have you had any surprises yet?
I can't think of anything in particular, but certainly one of the beauties of a collection of prints and drawings is that most of those things are kept stored away. And so that's always a great moment to sort of start pulling out boxes of prints and just looking and seeing what's there. And certainly the print collection is really wonderful. I mean, it ranges from everything from Durer to actually a French printmaker who I think is really wonderful, who is not very well known, called Felix Buau. So we currently have a small show with one Buau print in it. There are surprises like that that do come up fairly regularly in the course of work.
All right. Well, we wish you great success with this new exhibition, which again opens Sunday and runs through September 7th. Monet and the Seine, Impressions of a River. Sarah Lees, pleasure to get to know you. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much. It was a pleasure.
Sarah Lees is the Ruth G. Hardman Curator of European Art at Philbrook Museum. Philbrook presents Monet and the Seine, Impressions of a River, which opens Sunday and runs through September 7th at the museum. By the way, former Hardman curator Tanya Paul, who helped organize the exhibition, returns to Tulsa this Sunday at 2 to lecture on the exhibit. More information at philbrook.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.